Well, we'll go ahead and get started. Let's see. I don't know if I have the actual numbers that we do. You have the notice?
Do you have the wheels?
Good. Perfect. Thank you. Well, good afternoon. This is Julie Fedorchak with the North Dakota Public Service Commission. It is May 18th at 1:30 p.m., and we are gathered for an informal hearing with Xcel Energy to talk about some of the recent power outages in the Fargo area and really dig down and find out what the company has found in the last couple of weeks as you kind of looked at this more thoroughly and looked at the causes and also some solutions and where you see going in the future. And we want to also talk about, this relates to two cases that we have, PU-12-813 and PU-16-196, the last one, which is the annual report. And you included information in that report on some of your reliability. So there's some key data in there that we can examine from last year and this year as well and really have a good thorough discussion today, I hope. So thank you for being here. I know you've prepared some information, so we'll get to that. I first want to invite, what I thought we'd do is do our little opening comments, then have you guys give your presentation, and then we'll just open up for questions from us like we normally do, if that's okay. All right. Well, thank you. I won't make any additional opening comments. Save my comments for later and the questions. But I'll ask my colleagues if they care to speak. Randy?
Well, most everything I would have would be questions, so I'll just wait until after the presentation, and hopefully many of them will be answered.
Mr. Cox?
I'll take this opportunity to get in my soapbox a little bit, all right? And the first thing I'll say is I want to thank Xcel, because this is not a new issue, but I'll tell you that since being here in 2009, I really feel that Xcel is committed to keeping reliability very high. And the numbers in North Dakota support that. You've got very good reliability numbers in North Dakota. But what continues, I think, to plague all of us is why Fargo continues to underperform. We've had the rate cases. We put extra staff in Fargo. I know you've got the IntelliTeam switches we put into place. We did additional tree trimming. I mean, you have done a lot of work in Fargo. You know, you also supply power to Grand Forks as well as to Minot, and we don't see those kind of outages up there, knock on wood. And so it's almost like there's gremlins in the Fargo system, because I know that you've worked hard on it. I know that we went through some of the challenges. You always respond to it. You always come back with what happened. The challenge is, I just don't know why it performs that way. And the frustration, I think, is part of it that you do the good work, and these things still happen. And so I think when you look at the solutions, I think you've got the plan laid out there. We just have to continue to execute it. One thing I will say that is when people have come to want power 100% of the time, and in the conversations that I've had in the last week from, quite honestly, angry homeowners, angry businessmen and women that are upset about these outages, I've started to push back a little bit and say, listen, okay, what is it you expect from the companies? Well, we expect power all the time. And I said, well, that's not realistic. So tell me what your plan is for backup generation. And if it's a homeowner, I understand they're not going to have the backup generation, but the ability to use surge suppressors, the ability that if the company comes in and wants to cut down their trees a little bit, to cut back their lines, don't resist the company, let them in there. And in the individuals that own businesses that have called me, I've asked them, I said, where's your backup generators that are supposed to kick in when this happens? Well, we don't have them. We've removed them over the last few years. And so there's something out there that I think I'd like us to – I don't know what you've got prepared for today. I think it's more outage-specific. But I think we should go back and we tried this a few years ago, but go back and find some of these big users and see what their plan is for backup power. I know that I'm more familiar with what Cass County's done with their generators because some of the air quality issues that we've worked with them on. But perhaps we need to go back to some of these big users and see what they have for backup generation and the opportunities that they would have to then put that power back into the grid at peak times. Because people are going to want power 100% of the time, and I know we're going to walk through all this today with why these things happen. But I think there's a larger issue at play that companies and individuals have become so accustomed to 100% of the power that they've removed those systems which will help reduce some of these things that happen. I'm not giving you a pass on all this stuff, but I think there's an underlying tone there that you folks have done a very nice job of what you've keeping the system reliable, but the expectation has become very high, and because it is that way, we've removed those systems. So maybe we could hit on that towards the end, but just thank you for what your work is, and I'm not here today to give you heck on anything, just kind of walk through this, because it's so easy to throw stones at companies when the power goes down. And I don't think that's the intent, certainly not from me.
Thank you, Commissioner Culk. That's a good idea. I also want to just throw out there that I think that there are some really solid plans that have been in place. I think we need to question whether those are the right plans, because this has continued to happen despite some significant efforts and significant commitments by the company. So let's not just assume that we're doing this all the right way, that we should just keep doing the same things, but let's look at what we're not considering. And I hope that you guys have been doing that in the last couple of weeks and have some information like that to report back as well. So, all right, then let's turn it over to you, Laura.
Commissioners, thank you very much. Should I have my team go around and introduce themselves, and then I'll come back and just make some opening remarks. I'm Laura McCartan, VP of State Affairs, which includes our North Dakota service territory.
Kelly Block, Regional Vice President of Distribution Operations for the NSP territories.
Brad Siliason, Director of Design and Construction.
Dave Cedarquist, Regulatory Affairs.
Mark Nesbitt, XL Energy, Principal Manager, North Dakota.
Commissioner, I want to start by saying to all of you, thank you very much for scheduling this meeting so quickly. We do appreciate the opportunity to sit down with you and review this. We take these this spate of outages very seriously. We do believe that overall our reliability performance is good, but when a customer experiences an outage, that statistic really doesn't matter at that moment. We have been working hard to improve reliability. We think we've moved the needle on that. Frankly, our customers' expectations are increasing, and we want to be there and meet those increased expectations as we go forward. So we are the other thing I want to say is that this spate of recent outages and the concern with that is something that within our company is going right up to the top. Kelly's boss, my boss, Chris Clark, who's the president of the operating company, have both been very engaged in exactly what's going on and how we're responding to this. And with that,
I did receive a call from Chris yesterday, and I want to just express appreciation for that. And it is proof that it is reaching to that high level, and so I appreciate that.
Thank you, Commissioner. So everyone's introduced themselves, and we're going to what we have prepared here is to start by reviewing the outages. We call it the spate of recent outages that happened, I think, from April 26th through. I don't have the exact dates, but review those, what we learned about the causes of those, the immediate actions we took to respond to those, and share that information with you and answer some of the questions there. Then that will be Brad Siliason, who is our Director of Design and Construction. Then Dave Cedarquist will review from the past a settlement, from a past rate case where we were able, together with the commission, work on, I think, a very sort of really fantastic program of reliability improvements and monitoring that and adding some additional measures. Dave will review what we've done and what our performance has been on that over the last several years. Then Kelly will go into, we'll call it a proposed action plan. As we've looked at these particular outages, as we've looked more broadly at generally what drive outages, we are looking at some additional things that we could do, and we'd like to work on that with the commission to see is this going in the right direction. Some of these aren't fully fleshed out, so we need a little more time to flesh out a couple of them, but we want to review that with you and then clearly go into any questions and feedback that you have for us as we wrap up. So with that, I think that we'll turn it over to Brad, and we'll start with, we don't have handouts of this. We can certainly provide this to you after the fact, but it's there on the screen.
Thank you, Laura. This first slide, I just want to take a couple minutes to talk about the outages that happened from April 22nd through May 13th. This is information that we all provided you as some of these outages were going on and after the fact to let you know what had happened and things like that. Just a couple things to point out. The customer affected column is a totally maximum number of customers on those particular feeders. And then you've got the outage cause codes to the right. And then I will note on the outage duration, that really depicts the number of customers we were able to bring in either use of our interruptor system, Commissioner Kalk, that you had mentioned, that allows us to isolate the system and segregate it such that we can work on the part of the system we're having problems with without affecting the other customers or minimizing the effect to the other customers. So it shows the limited amount of time, if you will, that those customers saw. There's a couple things I'll point out again, and I want to shift to this map. You know, one of the things is if you look at those cause codes, there's really only one of them or two of them that are the same cause, and that was that cable failure we had. You can see on May 1st and May 2nd depicted with dots 4 and 5 where we really had a problem with some 500 MCM non-jacketed cable. It actually occurred, the fault actually occurred on the Minnesota side of the river as that feeder goes into Moorhead and then serves some of our customers in Minnesota. But those are the two really causes that were alike. And those are the only customers that saw repeat outages in this stretch of outages between the 22nd and the 13th. So we were able to isolate some of our customers and allow them to not see the full extent of some of these outages as they happen. So then I want to spend more time talking
about... So, Brad, did you say just two? I thought it was three caused by the cable, three of the recent ones. No?
No, it was just two. It was the one on the 1st and the 2nd, May 1st and 2nd. Yeah, I seem to have lost power.
Shine it, aim it up here.
And then when you were digging in and fixing that one, didn't another cable go back? Oh, now you're really going crazy, Dave.
Yeah, it was.
Now we're done. Maybe. Yeah,
why? It seems like I'm going the same direction no matter what I do here.
Does this thing? I'm sorry.
Are we going the right way now? Or this way?
That way.
Keep going?
Yep.
Back
one. Oh, that's an old
map.
That's
old
like
map.
33. We're at the end of
beyond
the end of your presentation.
Oh, beyond.
Yeah.
But to your question, Commissioner, the outage on the 1st and 2nd, the first outage on Sunday was the first failure to that cable. We actually fixed that cable and went to put it back into service on Sunday, and that's when it failed again. So we had fixed it, and it failed in a different spot. So that's the two on the 1st and the 2nd.
Okay.
Brad, if I could,
yep.
I can't add all those numbers in my head that quickly, but can I take away from this that there was never a duration of any customer for more than 2 minutes and or 4 minutes and 9 seconds?
Hours.
Oh, hours. I was like, wait a minute here.
hours and minutes.
Something's not adding up here. Okay,
yep.
Gotcha.
Yep. No, hours and minutes. For example, so if you look at the top one, example, and look at the duration, there were 2,519 customers affected for 2 hours and 31 minutes, and then 831 customers affected for.
Thank you, because I was like, wait a minute, I missed something here.
Yeah. For example, if you look at the one on May 2nd, for example, there were 456 customers affected for a minute.
Okay.
And then the others correspondingly.
And while we're on this slide, what's unknown? I mean, how do you fix something if you haven't found the problem yet?
And that's a great question, Commissioner. And we know we had a fault. We patrolled that with our field people multiple times. We had engineering staff out, patrolled it with multiple eyes, with multiple people, and we just could never get a determination based on what we saw.
Power just came back on its own?
Well, we isolated where we thought the potential problem was. And then when we didn't find anything, we systematically brought the system back in.
So it was probably a cable fault, too.
No, it was not a cable fault. We couldn't identify it. We knew it was somewhere on the overhead system, but we could never figure out, again, with multiple sets of eyes.
Tell us how you can say that it definitely wasn't a cable fault.
We have indicators on our system, for example, that will tell us, for example, if the fault passed by. For example, we have fault indicators that will show us and help us try to isolate the system. And in some cases, if we don't know, we may have to test a piece of cable, for example. if we can't determine exactly that it was the cable. So we may have to test it before we bring it back in service.
Yeah, and a cable failure is always, is probably too strong of a word, but always a permanent failure. So if the cable has faulted, and what literally happens, I mean, a piece of the cable blows apart, and there's a hole in the cable. If you try and re-energize that, you'd lock the feeder back out again.
Okay.
So typically when you have an unknown, it's something that may be something usually making contact with an overhead line. And, you know, in the case of an animal or something like that, you will typically find the animal because it's usually killed as a result. But sometimes it's a tree branch maybe that gets in. Sometimes we can identify that because we can see burn marks on the branch. Other times we can't. Sometimes if, you know, it might be wires slapping together, you know, something that it stays there long enough that it causes the protective equipment to open. But once the line's de-energized, it falls clear of the line. And again, we had multiple people out there patrolling. We knew a smaller section of line where we knew approximately where the fault occurred from a distance perspective, but there was just nothing that we could definitively say was the actual cause.
And in this case particular, as you can see to the right with the duration and teleruptors, we added teleruptors on this feeder, for example. The only part of this feeder that's underground is the head end, and the Intelliruptors isolated that front end piece and put it back in service, so we knew we didn't have a head end cable problem because it brought that back into service on isolation via the Intelliruptors.
Okay. It was May 1st and 2nd. Were those really warm days? Did you do overlay temperature and stress in the system at all, any of this, or...
No, I don't believe that we didn't have any loading situations, actually, Commissioner, okay. With any of these. It was a warm afternoon on that Thursday where we had that unknown outage.
Right.
But looking back at the system, we know we didn't have any overload situations or where the system was put in harm's way, if you will, based on what we could go back and track down.
An OH failure is what? Overhead?
Yeah, that was an overhead conductor failure. That particular outage, that last one, actually, even though it doesn't matter because it's an outage, it only affected our customers in Minnesota because of the way we had the system configured, and we're in the process, and I'll talk about that in a second, of replacing all of that cable. That outage actually only affected our customers on the Minnesota side of the river.
Well, how have you configured it to affect them? Do that again. The rest
except
of
I
it.
Live in Dilworth, so...
All right. So is it fair to look at those just as an overview and see that you've got animal out of your control, lightning out of your control, tree branch controllable, cable fault, both controllable, unknown,
maybe
controllable, pole fire controllable. So at least five of the eight are things that we can work on to reduce or eliminate.
I think there's some potential, for example, if we're doing what we say we're going to do, it helps minimize those. I'm not sure we could say it can completely eliminate them, but there are some things that we can do to try to minimize that.
Okay.
I would say that's very accurate. The lights all went off. I think it's got battery issues.
Vic, you're promoted.
So if I could have you go to the next one, please. So you want to take a little bit here and talk about, from an immediate action perspective, what we've done. That first couple bullet talks about the investment we've made over the past 10 days to replace 6,600 feet of cable. 3,400 feet of that is some paper and lead cable that we had trouble with in February. And We decided at the same time we wanted to get rid of the 500 non-jacketed that was related to the outage on the 1st and 2nd. We deemed it was prudent for us to get rid of all that cable and update it with new 750. So we pulled the trigger. We pulled in resources from both Grand Forks and Minot. We also brought resources from our St. Paul Underground Group. And we worked for a 10-day stretch, including Saturdays and Sundays, extended hours, to get that 6,600 feet of cable replaced, get it in service, and get it energized so we could get the system back to normal. A heck of a feat by our folks, if I might say so.
One of the things that's been a discussion point in the past is the removing of permanent crews in Fargo and Grand Forks and then relying on bringing in the crews from other areas. Do you have enough crews that are on the ground every day out doing what you need to do in Fargo?
Yeah, I think we do, Commissioner Calk. I think this is a situation where we, from a timeline perspective, what we wanted to do in
what are we down to,
frame,
like 4 or 5 crews out there now in Fargo?
We have 5.
It's not that many.
And plus a single man that does mostly streetlight work. Okay. So you've got 5 crews in Fargo. We have 4 crews in the Grand Forks area, and we have 5 crews up in Minot.
Okay. And in the 500 MCM replacement, that was part of the last rate case, the plan to lay that forward.
Right.
So when you switch that now, I want to make the correlation that when Xcel decides to do something additional, that's great, but there will be a cost to customers. Customers, I think that you're going to go spend all this money and there's no impact to them. So it's that constant benefit-cost analysis of what we do this and how we do it that I want to make sure comes out in this discussion.
And Kelly's going to talk about that.
Okay, that's coming up. All right.
Yep, absolutely. We absolutely understand that. Yep.
I'm with you guys understanding that, but the John public that understands that it's not a pocket of money that,
right,
that you dig into. It's a planned replacement schedule.
This was a year, though, where you had already planned to extend that replacement, so there was dollars allocated for that already.
We did have some dollars allocated for it, yes.
Okay. Right.
Yes.
For this year. So the question is, if you beef it up, where does that money come from?
Correct.
The 6,600 feet, that's for Fargo and Moorhead.
Well, some of the cable was in Moorhead, yes, Commissioner. Yeah. Yep.
And so give me some perspective, just a real rough ballpark. All of Fargo and Moorhead and West Fargo and that whole area, if you were starting fresh and putting in all your underground cable, how many miles would there be? I don't know if 6,600 feet, is that a 1/1% or is it?
Commissioner, I don't know that number off the top of my head. I can certainly get that for you. The number of underground feet versus overhead feet we have, for example, in Fargo in our system.
It seems to me like it's a pretty minimal amount. There's got to be many, many.
6,600 feet is a small percentage of our overall total.
Yes.
And,
correct.
And so how much of your overall percentage is this type of cable?
500.
The 500?
Yeah.
That's coming up.
Well, that or the paper lead cable.
Well, this paper and lead that we actually replaced, that's the last segment of that type of cable that we have.
So that's gone.
That is gone. That's correct.
Okay.
Yep. And we need to rely... To your point, Commissioner, earlier, we need to rely on our folks from St. Paul. That's a type of cable that's very unique, and it's when you don't use it, operate with it, and splice it, and do the things you need to do that cable on a regular basis. It's very hard to manage and work with. That's what those folks do on a regular basis. So that's where we have to call them in from St. Paul when we have problems, for example. Now this eliminates us from having to do that in the future, where this 750 MCM aluminum cable, jacketed cable we put in the ground, that's something we work with on a daily basis. We don't need support from others to deal with that.
Well, and I'll highlight also, too, it's not as easy that you just go replace this underground. You've got to coordinate with the city and their plans. I mean, it's not as easy as it someone will try to make it sound. There's construction plans you overlay with the city that are part of your build-up plan.
Right.
And when this fails, you're going to replace it, but you can't just go in and do it. There's multi-jurisdictions you've got to coordinate with.
Yeah, this was unique. The paper and lead was actually very unique in that, you know, some it's in duct system mainly through downtown on First Avenue. Most of it's on First Avenue. It jogs a little bit before it gets right downtown. But some of those older ducts have smaller holes. They're 4-inch holes versus 5- and 6-inch holes, which you need for the new cable. It's just larger. It's larger in diameter. So we had to do some things around single reels of cable, which we typically don't do up here in the north. We order 3-phase, so it all goes in together in a bundle. So we had some challenges there, absolutely. We also had some challenges in that there's a lot of work going on in Fargo. For example, there was a stretch where we had to wait, and the city worked very well with us. They allowed us to get in and close off 4th Street and 1st Avenue, which they're already in construction, and they allowed us to do it in a where we didn't have to do it at midnight. We were able to do it during the day, so it was easier for our folks to work. So, yes, it has many challenges, Commissioner. It isn't just, you don't just go throw it in. You're absolutely right.
Okay, we're already a half an hour in, so we better start.
Okay, so a couple other things we did is in February and March, we did and we do this on a regular basis, an infrared of our overhead system, which helps us to pick where we potentially may have some hot spots in the system, looking for it out where we may have some potential problems down the road. We brought in our infrared folks. Our engineering staff has the ability to do that. We brought them in again and redid the system over the past 3 or 4 days. Never found any glaring things, just, you know, some normal upkeep things that we normally see. Some heating on some switchblades, for example, needed cleaning up, things like that. Nothing that drew a bunch of red flags, for example. We also did some feeder patrols with our engineering staff. We do those. They get triggered several ways. Obviously, we wanted to take a look at the feeders that were affected during the outages. We identify things like making sure that our line clearance is where it needs to be. We identify where we may potentially add protective devices to limit the number of customers affected when something does happen, things like that. So we've done that. We've instituted some very minor things along with those patrols. And thirdly, you know, when we instituted the IntelliRupter system in Fargo, we knew it was a new technology, and we knew there was going to be some things we learned. We had some communication problems we've identified. We had some bad batteries on a interrupter, which helps the system communicate to each other. We thought we were going to get 7 to 9 years out of battery life, what we were told. We're end up seeing about 3 years of battery life, for example. So we've instituted a battery maintenance program with these so that we make sure all the communication's happening as it needs to so that they can do their job when we need them to.
Temperature must affect battery life because you've used this in other places in your system, right?
Yeah.
Looking back, it's like, duh, but it happens.
Yeah, it does. Yep.
Commissioners, we thought it would be helpful to just quickly review the initiatives that we committed to as part of a previous rate filing, and you can see them here, the emphasis being on distribution automation, replacing the 500M cable, vegetation management. So what has actually transpired in the last 3 years? We did install 25 switches, 25 IntelliRupters. They were operational by the end of 2012. We've actually gone back and looked over the last 3 years how many customer minutes did those switches save, and it's roughly 25% over that 3-year period that they reduced the amount of time that customers were out of power. So very effective. We have replaced over 23,000 feet of the 500M cable since 2012. We have extended that program from the original 3-year commitment we made, so we continue to do that work. Our vegetation management budget in 2012 was increased about 25%, and we reduced the cycle for doing our complete tree trimming cycle to 4 years, and we are maintaining that now. We're on a good schedule there. We did locate an engineer right in the Fargo office, NDSU grad, Commissioner Kalk. He actually ended up taking he had a great opportunity with the IntelliTeam company, so he ended up leaving. But we've now...
go figure.
Yeah. we have another good engineer in place. He's been there a couple of weeks, also from NDSU, proud to say. And, of course, his primary focus is on North Dakota system. Then the last thing that I should talk about is the reliability performance plan that was filed and in place since 2013 to 2015, and then again extended through this year in the last rate settlement.
Dave, before you do that, are we coming back to the cable in a later slide? Mm-hmm. Okay.
We had an incentive in that plan. We focused on our SAIDI results. Staff established a very, very difficult threshold of 57 minutes, that if we could reach that, there would be a financial incentive. We also instituted a program of customer credits for customers who had experienced four or more outages in a given year. And so that's been in place now for 3 years. And we also began reporting some of our reliability survey results to the commission in the annual report as well. And you can see the results here in the table. We've had actually some very good SAIDI results in the last 3 years. In fact, 2014, we came very close to that award threshold. I will say on the survey, we're very pleasantly surprised by the fact that about 9 out of 10 customers ranked our reliability on a scale of 1 to 10 as an 8 or higher. So overall, we're getting some good feedback in terms of the survey.
What does CEMI stand for?
That stands for Customers Experiencing Multiple Interruptions. So, and that's the, that's the CME acronym. We had $284,000 that we paid in 2015. That was disappointing for us. We've taken a look at that and we've studied that. And, you know, the thing about the CME credits is it only takes a couple of feeders with a good amount of customers on them to go out four times, and you've got, you know, you've got a good CME payment looking at. So, but we are analyzing those results from 2015. We actually had extremely good results the years before.
And are those in your analysis of the difference between 2014 and 15? Is that a cable issue? What were the differences in the outages between 2014 and 15?
You want to talk to that, Brad?
It actually was, Commissioner, but the cable problem. It actually was, but the cable effect in that CME was actually in Grand Forks.
Oh.
Right, system-wide.
Correct.
So what I'd like to talk to you a little bit today, first I'm going to start off talking about the investment that we've been making over the years. And the couple things I want to draw your attention to is really the increase from 12 to 13 in the 500 MCM cable replacement, and also in 2012, the investment in the Intella team. You can see we definitely stepped up our level there. And then, you know, in later years, we've pretty much consistent with some of our overhead rebuild programs, but we have been investing a little bit more over the years in our underground system. So, there we go. So, you know, after we've reviewed all of these outages, and we've really been, you know, first of all, focusing on the immediate issue, but then also looking a little bit longer term on, you know, how do we continue to move the ball forward with our reliability in North Dakota? And, you know, we've looked at a few different programs, and we have some ideas that we definitely want to explore with the commission and staff. This top item here is something, though, that we really do think that it's proper to go ahead and start this pilot in 2016. And both in 2014 and most recently, just last week, we've had some pole fire issues in North Dakota. And, you know, pole fires are typically happen along some of our more heavily traveled roadways, particularly at higher speeds. They're caused by contamination along those lines, usually road salt, liquefied road salt that's put down that sprays up onto the system. You know, we've been studying these for a while. I mean, North Dakota is not the only area that experiences those. And, you know, what we're finding is that we have high-risk areas. And in those high-risk areas, we have high-risk poles in those areas. So, like I said, it's typically along major roadways. And then these poles are typically poles that have equipment on them or some reason that they just have more parts and pieces on the pole, and you get increased levels of tracking, which causes the pole fire, which causes an outage. So what we would like to do is implement this pole fire mitigation pilot. We've identified about 20 poles in the Fargo area where we would go in and change the wood cross arms to fiberglass cross arms, and then also re-insulate, so change out the insulators on those poles. Actually, we would over-insulate. So instead of 25 kV, we'd put in 35 kV, which they're actually longer pieces of equipment. So the tracking distance is longer, and you're less likely to have a pole fire.
Should we just do a quick explanation of the causes of a pole fire, the tracking and so forth?
Where does the fire start? And
okay, and a picture may be helpful, but let's just kind of go to talking that through, because this is, I find it quite interesting myself.
As you get to that thing, I'll just throw a thought about the pole fires. Is my dad worked for power company for 40 years, right? Yeah. And so he called me that night and he said, "Why the heck aren't they cleaning their poles?" And I said, "What do you mean, Dad?" He goes, "Well, you've got to go out every spring. It's part of the crews, and they know what poles are going to have problems, and they clean them." So they've been cleaning poles in North Dakota, the co-ops, for 40 years.
Okay.
So I don't know, call it a pilot what you want, but it works. So, and I think that's where I would go back to my question about the crews. A lot of the co-ops, that's standard SOP. They go out in the spring, and they know which ones have this problem. They clean them off every year, every spring, and then that's it. So I think it's a great idea, but I think it's not even a pilot. It's proven to work.
Yeah. So this is a little different than washing the poles.
It's better.
It's better because it will be a permanent fix, and so you will make a capital investment, and then we won't have that ongoing O&M. So this is just kind of an illustration of a pole, and there's a current path, and basically you get
you hit them.
Which one?
In the middle.
The middle?
Right, okay. Right,
yeah.
There,
so the insulator right here. You'll get, they get dirty and contaminated. The conductor is where that top arrow is. Right there is the conductor's there. So that's where your live device is. You'll get current from that conductor tracking and leaking along there. And then it's trying to get to ground. The poles have a ground rod on it. So it travels to the center, the current travels to the center of the pole. You usually have some wet wood and some dry wood. You get some heating that starts in there. And then what you end up with is this. The pole catches on fire there. And so that's what it looks like after the fire has taken place. So, and then what this is actually the top of the cross arm, and this is where the insulator would be. It's just removed. And what you see here is the tracking that takes place then along the cross arm towards the pole.
That's tracking? You mean current?
Current, yep, current just center. Moving toward to the center of the pole.
And what you tend to get is wet weather exacerbates that and allows that tracking to track off that insulator down to that arm. And as Kelly stated, then it's trying to get to ground, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so the wet wood becomes more of a conductor. So, get back to where we were.
Do you go out there, and does the fire department go
come out? It would depend, Commissioners. If sometimes the fire department gets there before we do, sometimes we get there. It just depends on how severe the fire is, for example.
Yeah.
You know, if it's 2 o'clock in the morning, we're calling guys in, it may be, it may be 60 minutes before we get there, for example. If it expands far enough or the fire department needs to be called, sometimes they get there. They'll typically wait for us so that we can make sure we extinguish the fire safely for everybody. Mm-hmm. So.
All right. So, you know, this is definitely, and the reason for the pilot is we believe that, you know, we can be very selective in which poles need the mitigation. And this pilot is to kind of prove that concept or let us know if we need to expand the number of poles that we do this mitigation on.
To Commissioner Kalk's point about the cleaning of the poles, mm-hmm. is that something that you guys do? Is that part of your standard operating procedure every year?
You know, we do some cleaning on some of the transmission lines. We have not, and Brad, you can, I know we haven't done it across the rest of our system in our other states, but we don't typically wash all of our distribution poles.
You could just wash a few of the main ones.
Yeah.
I just throw out there that the long-term impacts of Fargo under people want to switch to underground at Fargo.
Mm-hmm.
So to put more investment in overhead right now when we maybe should be looking at broader in underground in some of these areas, I think you got to look at it. So I've opened any discussion, but I don't know if it's as easy as just going out and spending more and more money on overhead. Dave and Mark are much more tuned into that discussion, but a lot of folks want underground. So there could even be a broader discussion about some of this overhead.
Mm-hmm.
If we're going to spend more money on overhead, put it underground.
Commissioner, is that $100,000 each or a total of
$100,000?
That would be a total amount that we would proceed and go ahead with, and then we could have a conversation about whether we go beyond that. Is there something more expansive or not? The other thing I'll just mention, Commissioner, is I think one of our major causes of outages are underground cable failure. So people like underground, but it's, as you know, it's a trade-off. Yeah.
Right. So
why don't you do the pole cleaning?
They don't have enough crews, that's why. You've heard that song and dance out of me before.
Well, but even in the high traffic areas where you know this is a problem, I mean, do you not find it effective? Not to, I mean, go ahead and tell him that his dad is wrong.
Yeah.
Go ahead, because he'll be down here in 20 minutes.
I know. I would never say your dad is wrong. and you know, it can work. But it hasn't been a common practice for us. It's labor intensive. It's high O&M.
Yep.
And so, you know, the cost benefit we've not felt is there. We don't have a lot of pole fires. But when we do have a pole fire on the main line, it's a big deal.
You also can't wash that without having that circuit de-energized.
Oh. You have to create an outage to do it.
Well, no, you don't necessarily have to create an outage, for example.
But loop it around somehow.
Yeah, you'd have to switch it out, for example. And that certainly has its complexities as well. So you create some abnormalities in the system, for example, and some other things.
Okay. So then, obviously, the next thing, and again, we do definitely want to talk to you about you know, how we might approach this. But, you know, we've been replacing 500 MCM cable. We've replaced about 40% of it that's on the system. So so when we started in 2012, 40% of it since that time period is gone. There's 60% remaining on the system.
And how much of that is in Fargo?
Probably, I would say half. Of the total that's left is probably in Fargo. Brad, would you agree with that?
Yes, that's about right. Yes.
And the 40% that's been replaced, how much of that was in Fargo?
About half. Fargo, 41% in Fargo has been replaced. So, okay. It's fairly proportional.
Okay. Actually, a little more than half is Fargo.
Yeah.
Yeah, we don't have very much left in Minot. As a matter of fact, there's very little left in Minot. But more in Fargo, yes. Mm-hmm. About half of it left. Yep.
So we would propose, you know, defining the time period, you know, to get that taken care of and all of that replaced on the system. You know, the slide here is proposing by 2018 that we go ahead and get that.
Well, we'd already kind of laid that out, your replacement plan based on the previous rate case. I thought that took us right to 100%. It just took us a while to get there.
It takes us a while to get here. This would be shortening that time frame up.
Okay.
Yep. So, yeah, instead of just doing, you know, I think the rate case was $400,000 a year. Is that right?
The original was $250,000 a year for 3 years, and we quickly found out that that wasn't going to get us there in 3 years. Okay. So we started actually, we moved some of our funding that we had underrun on the IntelliTeam switches. We started directing it towards the cable replacement program to keep that going. But, yeah, we found out that there's a lot more cable to replace.
Yeah, I think, Commissioner, when we had those discussions and we started that, you know, we were at the – Corey was at – our engineering staff was at the beginning of evaluating exactly where it was. Since then, we did a very expansive search of our system to verify exactly where it was, which took a lot of time and effort and a bunch of field work because you got to get in manholes, things like that. So originally, we didn't quite know the detail that we do now.
Okay. Yeah. Wait, can you go back to the overall cost there? Or are we getting to that? Overall capital cost of, is that on the cable?
That would be everything. The combined. Let's go to the next slide. It kind of breaks things out in detail. So, you know, when we look at our total cost of outages, not just this year, but over the long, you know, the last 5 or 6 years, you know, underground cable is our leading cause of outages. And we do believe, you know, if we can replace this 500 unjacketed cable, that's definitely going to go a long ways to help. But it's not, you know, the 500 isn't the only cable on the system that is failing. But we have some other programs, you know, in place that can help move that along as well. The next thing that we can do as a proposal is expand the IntelliTeam. We need to continue to kind of flesh this out. Obviously, if we can remotely switch when we have a failure, it's going to, you know, reduce the time that customers are impacted and the number of customers who are impacted.
I remember in the rate case
on the system.
We asked a question, about why don't we do this in Grand Forks and Fargo, because it was supportive of that at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys wanted to check to make sure they're working, so you're telling us now it's working and you like it, so you want to expand it.
Yeah, I mean, if
are
we want to...
Are you thinking Fargo and Grand Forks, too? Because if we're going to do this, I think you maybe start putting investment in those communities, too.
We are very open to expanding this outside of the Fargo area.
Yeah, Commissioner, I think what we'd like to do is sit down and say, where do we get the biggest bang for the buck? And there's some differences in how the two communities are designed and how many customers are on an average feeder. So, but this is the level of detail that we haven't been able to get into yet, and we'd like to pursue that further working with the commission. So we could say, here's the best way to spend money and get the most impact.
And if your leading cause by a good percent is underground cable and you fix that, then do you need the IntelliTeams? I mean,
you know, there's always going to be problems
on the
system.
If you have those switches, yeah. My understanding is that you're right, Commissioner, that those cables are a big thing. But when you have the bird land, the tree hit, those switches will allow you to reroute immediately, which will...
Yes.
Cut down even further the chances of...
Yeah, you know, replacing underground cable helps you reduce the number of underground outages you have, but...
it's going to happen.
You'll have cars hit poles, you'll have cars hit switch cat. I mean, you won't get away from outages, right. And this these will help mitigate regardless of the cause. And then the last item we have there is... additional pole fire mitigation, and you know, depending on the outcome of the pilot, we would continue to roll that out into the high risk areas.
Why would we start with that early on instead of those 20 poles that you think mm-hmm. are the most vulnerable, just washing those for a year or two and trying it and taking that money and sticking it into even further moving the 500 cable replacement plan along, getting more of that done immediately. If that's the biggest source of the problem, why don't we attack just the biggest source first?
I think we're open to that.
And on that cable, you said that the fault occurred in Minnesota. I've never quite understood Moorhead's electric system, what you serve and what their public power
right.
thing that they have serves.
don't.
So, but when you're replacing cable over there, how is it paid for? And when you're replacing cable in North Dakota, how is it paid for?
If distribution plant is assigned directly to the state that the system resides in.
So the proportion of the project that occurs in Minnesota, those costs go to Minnesota customers. So I think it's basically just geographic.
Right.
If there's some shared elements, then they're proportioned between the two jurisdictions.
Right. I think, we're unique in Fargo-Moorhead. You know, Moorhead is a municipality. They serve their own electric energy needs within the city limits of Moorhead. We have to get through the city of Moorhead to get to our Minnesota customers that we serve in Dilworth and Glendon, out on Highway 10 and then up Highway 9 up towards Ada. And because our customer size is smaller in Minnesota, the system was set up to begin with because you don't want to allocate a bunch of costs that you don't need to serve the volume of customers you have. Our distribution system flows across the river to serve our customers in Minnesota, because that's the most cost-effective way to do it from an overall rate-based perspective. So, but that cable, whether it was replaced in Minnesota or North Dakota, we do have customers on the head end of that feeder as that feeder comes through downtown. So that feeder in itself serves both North Dakota customers and Minnesota customers. So regardless of where the problem is, you have a potential to cause an effect for both North Dakota customers and Minnesota.
Commissioner Christman, to your question, I guess what I'd like to do is do some more analysis and kind of compare if what the annual O&M cost would be, additional annual O&M cost would be associated with, say, a washing approach versus, say, the annual revenue requirement associated with investing into the more permanent sort of reconfiguration of the poles. So that I get your question, and I'd like to be able to do that analysis and understand the trade-off between those two.
Okay. Where does the pole fire show up on your categories of 10 outage causes, top 10 outage causes? Is it lumped in with something else?
It's down a little ways. For example,
well, it's not listed separately, but maybe it was part of
2015. It was the fifth highest cause. We had 339 customer minutes, 309,000, sorry. Customer
poll.
Minutes, but
okay.
It was the fifth highest.
On the lengthy, okay.
Yep. If you take out 15, Commissioner, I think that would, it would go down the list a ways.
Because there was a bunch of them that
Yeah,
year.
That's yes. true.
Did you ever find out if the beet juice was more of a problem than what they used prior to that?
In our other states, we found once they switched over to either, Colorado uses corn syrup, so, you know, if it's beet juice here, it's stickier. It sticks to the roads great, and it is great from a driving perspective, but it sticks to everything else, and so you get a lot more dust and things that you get more contamination. And when people have started, states and communities have started using those stickier substances to help it adhere to the roads, we have in those areas seen increases in the number of pole fires.
I'm just thinking, Kelly, how I'm explaining to my friends at the Bison Turf how the road problems with the put beet juice is going to cause their power to go out.
I know.
I'm tracking, but...
I know. No one wants to hear it.
They're like, okay, Brian.
Yeah, it sounds crazy. Yeah, I...
Okay.
So anyway, this is where we get to that, you know, 5 to 9 million, you know. But again, we'd like to continue to work with you and your staff, and really make sure that this is meeting all of the objectives in the state.
Now, how much of this can be found within your existing revenues, and how much are you talking about needing, like, some sort of an increase in revenues to accomplish this? I mean, are you assuming you're redirecting, you're using what's already been allocated or budgeted for O&M and that sort of thing, or are you talking new revenues?
Commissioner, the proposed pole fire mitigation pilot, we would do within our existing revenues is what we do. The work that we've done with some of the continuation of the 500 MCM we did under the existing revenue structure, we see this as being above and beyond. So we'd like to, you know, talk about how much of this has a good value for the cost impact to customers and work on a cost recovery discussion with you on that.
So the 500 cable replacement, and this is what I was kind of curious about on the last, when we talked about this earlier on. It was originally decided, I think, in that settlement for a certain number of years. And, Mike, if you are able to jump in and clarify some of this. And then there was an extension of it that took us through, I forget when, and a certain number of dollars allocated. So I'm just frustrated with the, you know, like I would like more clarity on how much is invested, when, how much do we commit to, and how much got replaced. You've covered some of that, but how much is it going to cost to cover the rest of it, and under what time frame is reasonable? So I think we're getting there, but I still don't know. I don't have that. It's not clear enough on this 500 cable. And
I can maybe talk a little bit to that. In the settlement, when I had said that we had agreed to $250,000 per year, that's a capital expenditure, the revenue requirement for that in 2012 at that time was only about $20,000. So that's all that was added to the revenue in that settlement. That's all that's, you know, assigned to that underground cable. So I think if we're looking at a really accelerated short 2-year program to get rid of it all and looking at spending $3 to $4 million, we would want to maybe work out some kind of an amortization or a deferral or some kind of mechanism where we can decide what would be, you know, a reasonable amount to include in a test year and a future rate case and recover over time. So
well, I just throw out there that, I mean, there's nothing that I've heard today as a shock. These are the same things we dealt with 6-8 years ago. And we knew we had to replace the 500 cables. We knew we had to do the tree trimming. We knew we had to do other stuff. And we put aside X amount of dollars for you guys to do that. So now we're back in front of us because we've had a slew of outages. And so the question is, do we keep the current investment going or do we accelerate it? So, I think Commissioner Fedorchuk's right on track, but there's nothing here today that, to me, is earth-shattering. It's just, do we want to accelerate? I think the tree trimming, we did the catch-up, and what I remember then is the tree trimming plan you have now should be fine. I think the real question is the IntelliTeam expansion and the 500 cables. The analysis is, do you want to accelerate that schedule, and are we willing to approve that? Mm-hmm. And what Julie says is quantify what that would be.
And how do you decide? I mean, the plan to date has been when there's an outage or multiple outages on that cable, then it's targeted for replacement.
And this, we would just target it for replacement.
If I may.
Yeah, go ahead.
Commissioner, first of all, I appreciate your question about lay this all out. So the settlement said 250 a year, 13, 14, 15 for this proactive cable replacement, which is don't wait for it to fail. Just find out where it is and put it in your plan to get out there and start pulling it out. And then a certain amount for IntelliTeam switches. That was what was in the settlement. We can show you year by year, here's how much we actually spent on the proactive replacement of the 500 MCM cable. Here's what we spent on installing the IntelliTeam switches. Here's how many feet of cable we removed for spending that amount. Here's where we are today, and we're approximately 41% of complete removal. And then to go through an accelerated period over the next 2 years to get all of that out, here's how much we'd have to spend over these next 2 years to get the remaining 60% out. If I understand your question, we can easily lay that out for you. I don't think we have it for you right here.
Okay.
But we have been spending more than $250,000 a year on the proactive replacement of the MCM cable. Yeah, so that is in a previous slide there. So we've actually gone beyond, I think, what was in the settlement for investing in the MCM cable. But the pace was still such that 3 years into it, we still have a lot yet to remove.
But as you're doing that and as you move forward doing it, heaven forbid this is going to turn into another boundary war. But Are you just replacing the stuff on the North Dakota side because we've asked for it or demanded it or approved it, but not the Minnesota side? But as we heard, it was cable on the Minnesota side that failed that caused the outages for North Dakota customers? Or how's that interaction with the Minnesota Commission and customers going?
Well, Commissioner, back when we, and Commissioner Colko spearheaded this, when we entered into this settlement, it was a discussion that said, we want there to be a balance of some additional investment in North Dakota so we can get better reliability performance. Minnesota or any other state commission might look at that and achieve a different point that they appreciate that balance on. If Minnesota wants us to go forward on something more aggressively and will give us the cost recovery for it, we'd have that same conversation with them. Now I'll turn it over to Kelly to say, do we even have any MCM unjacketed cable elsewhere?
We do. We have unjacketed 500 in Minnesota as well. We do have a cable replacement program in Minnesota as well. So,
but to the extent that's where the cable failed that caused the outage, two of the outages we're looking at, replacing the cable in North Dakota, had we been done, these outages still would have occurred. So thereby the IntelliTeam switches are pretty important too.
Correct, correct. But Brad, maybe you can address, do we have a significant amount of underground in Minnesota as it relates to the Fargo system?
Actually, that's a great question. And with what we did last week, that actually takes care of what cable, underground cable, we have in Minnesota. We have two short segments right on the in Moorhead, right on the Minnesota side. Both of those segments of cable have been replaced within the last 5 years. So we no longer, and once you go beyond that of what we serve in Minnesota, we don't have any underground feeder cable. It's all overhead.
Okay.
Yep.
Just another thought that as you prepare that document, I think that part of the discussion in the rate case was that there's a timing factor with the city and all these other things that you could have all this money to replace it the year one, but you can't physically do it. So that's why we laid it out there. So even if the commission said you can have a gazillion dollars to replace it all next 6 months, you can't do that. So that's why please don't oversell the expectation that all this can be replaced because it's going to have to phase. I think the question is, when can we, on the current schedule, get to there? So I don't think we can compress it much more. Just my gut.
I think we can. We believe we can accomplish by the end of, is it 2017 or 18? By the end of 2018, we believe we could remove the rest of that 500 MCM cable.
Yeah. And that would be about $4 million for the total. Not each year, not each year of
right.
2016 and 17.
What's left to remain, what remains to be replaced is about $4 million.
And all we're doing is shifting those costs to these earlier years instead of the out years because we'd always agreed that it needed to come out. It's just a matter of when to do it because we had testimony in the rate case that you don't want to be pulling out good cable either. It's a trade-off.
Yeah, and this would all be for this 500, which is the stuff we want to remove from the system.
So if I'm tracking this right, from 2012 to 2014, those 3 years, you committed $750,000 and spent it on this replacement. Then we had another settlement, and that was then we extended another year to 2015, increased it to $1.7 million total. That was the IntelliTeam money. And then you just included in your O&M another $400,000 in 2016. With your existing revenues. So that's where it's at $2.1 million for this.
That's right.
Okay.
We've spent $2.1 million in the 5 years that we've been at this.
But O&M versus or capital.
It's capital.
Capital.
Not O&M.
Capital.
Okay, capital, yes. So 5 years, $2.1 million, you've replaced about half. 40%. All right. And this $3.5 to $4 million, that'll replace all of it in North Dakota, a bulk of which is in Fargo?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I would say about half of what's left is in Fargo.
Okay, and then Minot, you said, has very little, so then it's just Grand Forks and Fargo.
Yeah, there's about exactly as much remaining in Fargo as there is in Minot and Grand Forks combined. So, yes, half of it is in Fargo. Of the remaining 60%, half of it is in Fargo.
So before we get too far down, and I have a 2:45 appointment, but so you have never gotten to the point about why this is occurring in Fargo and not in Grand Forks. If there's very little in Minot, and there's about the same amount in Minot and Grand Forks as Fargo, that's only Grand Forks has a lot, too. I don't hear of outages there all the time.
I think we do have, do we have SAIDI figures that we can look at by city? Or by generally that city?
Is it in the back there?
No, it's not. Okay. Is it by community?
Did you have it?
As we're wrapping up,
five here, largest subs, we've got it in the
There
the
is one
report.
Back in there, yeah. Right, whoops, you passed it.
One more?
More back.
There. And on this particular table, we did remove a storm out of the Minot numbers that wasn't normalized, but it was a storm, so we took it out.
Dave, is this a five-year average or
nope,
one year?
No, this is 2015.
This is 2015.
Results. But the bottom row shows the SAIDI by city there, and you can see that Fargo's at 61. This was in 2015, and Grand Forks 81, and then Minot 34, so...
You know, commissioners, to your question of why Fargo and not the other cities, I think what we've seen from a cable perspective is it's a little bit cyclical. We seem to get hit one year in one place, and one of the things that really tends to cause us problems is when we have a lot of lightning. You know, when we have, for example, if we'd have a we'd have a lot more lightning, for example, in a spring in Fargo versus Minot and Grand Forks, we tend to see an uptick in aged cable problems when you see a lot more lightning. Now, some of that, it's logical, right? Because you tend to have hits on the system from lightning. Yes, we try to protect our system as much as we possibly can, but once that lightning gets in the system, it really has an impact on older cable. We've just seen that over time. For example, I think some of the SAIDI issues you saw last year in Grand Forks was really due to a piece of 500 cable we had in Grand Forks that we ended up replacing last fall. It actually crossed the interstate about 6th Avenue North in Grand Forks.
Could we get data? That was 2015. Right. Grand Forks had more problems in 15 than Fargo did, so I would like to be able to give you the data that shows the three communities in other years so you can see more than just one year snapshot. And we can get
in
that
your
too.
If you look at in your annual report, it sort of gets to that because it breaks it down by the largest five subs and goes back to 2011.
Okay.
So you can see Grand Forks, Fargo, Grand Forks, Minot.
And I think, you know, in Fargo, we have to remember, too, we have a 25 kV distribution system, which means you have some longer feeders. That's just the nature of the difference between the 25 kV and 15 kV systems. So you have longer circuits. You tend to have a little more exposure because of those longer circuits, for example. So I think that's a function of it as well. But, you know, we're kind of battling this unprotected underground system that we put in early on in life. When we put the underground cable in, and we've talked about this before, is, you know, when we started in the late 60s, early 70s of putting these underground cable systems in, we were learning because we hadn't used underground in our system, and we probably didn't, and we know we didn't. We didn't lightning protect it as well as we do today, and as well as we should have protected it when we put it in. But it's one of those things.
Technologies weren't there, so don't
absolutely
try to.
Yep. Yeah.
We know more today than we did 30 years ago.
Yes.
In many respects. But commissioners, what I'd like to do is make sure that we're capturing the questions and maybe start talking about next steps and where we could go from here. I think we've got some information we can get back to you.
There's one question that I get asked fairly often from people in Fargo, some reporters from Fargo and others just in the community. So I think it's kind of one of the things that is buzzing around, and I'm sure that Dave and Mark have been asked this question, but there's this sense or fear that somehow your Fargo system is just compromised, that it's not good, and that it's an aging system, that there's delayed investment in it, and it's just not somehow not up to the needs of the growing community. So I would like to get your answer to that, since it's something that I'm getting asked quite regularly.
Commissioner, I think we've actually had an enhanced focus on Fargo. I think when we look at our standards across our system, Fargo is right there with all the rest of our communities. It does have a slightly different, somewhat different design basis than some other communities, but that doesn't make it less reliable or less in any regard. It's certainly a focus for the company. I think as we looked at the money that we've spent, and a big portion of that has been investments in Fargo, that we, in our overall data, the SAIDI that we look at, which is an overall number for the whole state, is very strong. It's the best in our company of all of our states. But as the commission asked us to do in the last case, also dive down and look at those customers that are experiencing multiple outages. And that number can bounce around a lot, but and it helps us focus to really understand what those are. But we're not seeing a systemic issue. We're seeing a variety of causes there. We think there's more we can do to do even better for all of North Dakota. We really do not see that there is something fundamental about Fargo that is less in terms of robustness, standard, investment, any of that sort. Kelly, you've worked across our whole system.
Yeah.
So,
eight outages in 3 weeks is concerning, but we do have, unfortunately, some of these areas go on a bad streak like this and then won't, and, you know, I hate to
jinx it,
but then you won't see something for a very, very long time. The Fargo system has historically been very reliable. I don't believe that it is all crumbling and falling apart, instantaneously. Everything's happening at once. But we want to make sure that's not the case. And we're really focusing a lot of efforts. When we find something, we're taking care of it, Brad's folks, they're very dedicated to our customers and making sure that they respond promptly when we do have a problem. So I don't see anything that's really systemic here. I have seen similar issues in other communities across the eight states we serve over the last 25 years that I've worked for the company. I know we'll be able to work our way through this, and
If I may, the empirical data that we showed on the charts, it's there. Whether we're comparing ourselves to our own system, whether we're comparing ourselves to utilities in North Dakota, from a broad perspective, the results are very good. They're on the chart. They're on the graph. They're defensible. It's the real numbers. So I know that in these situations where we have these unusual outages, it's very frustrating for all of us. But there really shouldn't be an argument or any issue with the integrity of the system, because the scores are there, and it shows.
Go back one slide, though, again. When you say a typical customer is without power each year, so I don't know your system in the other states, but here, you have Thompson and Berthold, a few small towns, but mostly you have three big areas. I compare that to an MDU that's out west here that has lots of small towns, lots of miles hooking up. And so I would expect in an area like MDUs, their typical customer would be off power for more minutes per year than yours with essentially just three large cities. So I don't know, Texas and Wisconsin and other places you serve, I don't know if they're more comparable to MDU in western North Dakota or to XL in North Dakota. So I don't know if this is meaningful to me or not.
And I would say it's quite meaningful. I mean, the North Dakota system is very similar to how we serve our other areas. So, for instance, in Colorado, we serve large communities. We really don't serve rural areas. Okay. We have a few small rural areas that we serve in Colorado, but not much. In Texas, again, very similar. It's Amarillo. It's around the Lubbock area. It's the towns not the rural areas. And really, Minnesota is the same way. We do have a little bit more rural area in Minnesota, but it's mainly the communities, not the. Yeah.
I think Wisconsin
area.
Might be more comparable because we have more spread out service territory around Wisconsin, but but South Dakota also, it's really focused around Sioux Falls. Like more mostly.
Okay.
So if we're talking about next steps, really we've got you've laid out three investment options to get at this. I think we've asked for some additional information on the cable replacement. It strikes me that you don't have much of this cable left in Minnesota. You've got hardly any in Minot. So let's get it done. I mean, we know this is causing trouble. When you look at it on the charts of outage causes, it's way above the others. I mean, 30 more outages caused by the cable than the next closest outage cause, which was trees. So last year. So I think we have to do that and look at shortening that time frame and upgrading, making that pretty significant upgrade. As far as the IntelliTeams and the pole stuff, I guess I'd like to see the cost benefit as it relates to the cable and make some good choices there and look at more of a plan for how we pay for this and what the costs are going to be for the customers.
And we actually, our engineers are looking at that right now. We just weren't going to have that data for today, so they are taking a look at the next step on the IntelliTeam to see what that would involve and where the biggest bang for the buck would be.
So that's where I'm at. Randy, you have to scoot, so you want to offer any?
Well, I think pretty much the same thing. I think the focus, most of your demonstration here and discussion has been on the cable, and I think that's, to me, a bigger priority than replacing those poles. And if other companies are washing off a few vulnerable poles, that seems to me that might merit some further consideration before spending the money replacing parts when we know we need that money to replace cable.
Well, I just echo kind of what I said in the beginning. I think commend Excel for that slide right there. We cannot lose sight of the performance in North Dakota is very good. And as we look at the Fargo system, I think we've continued to identify these cables as being a problem. So I agree with my colleagues that replacing those cables is a priority. But like we had in the rate case, what you can really do with the city, if you think you can get it all done by 2018, I'm completely fine with working out the investments so you can get that done. And I continue to remain a fan of the IntelliTeam switches. So if you think some more of those go in, I would also think that's a good idea. And as far as the pole replacement, I'm sticking with my dad. All right. And then I would offer up the last point.
You need to hire Rodney Culk as a consultant.
He's retired. Is I would like to maybe explore what I was talking about with the backup generators and your big users, because that is an issue. And I think it's an opportunity that where if we can get these big Fargo industrial users that are XL Power, that they have the right generators, you can work with them to put that back in the grid. I don't know where your program is on that, but I think that's something that we haven't talked about, I think, is an opportunity, because these, as you were saying, Kelly, this stuff is going to happen. And these big, heavy industry users, everybody's important, but when they lose 4 hours of production, they lose a lot. So they should be doing the investment in their backups. Maybe we can help them get to there.
So I have somebody waiting for me now, but so we can quell the rumors that as far as fixing on poles or anything, that there's going to be a beet juice rider. That's not going to happen, right?
Thank you so much, Commissioner.
Sorry, I have to leave early.
Okay, do you need any further direction? Do we have enough to go on? Mike, did you have any thoughts to add?
This has been very helpful. Again, thank you all for having this meeting so quickly and for the very productive exchange. We really appreciate it. We'll go back and come back with some more details and work something out here that works for our customers.
And what's a reasonable time frame for kind of coming back with
a the IntelliTeam?
I just had a thought that we just scheduled a PI meeting this morning for June 22nd. Maybe that's the topic we talk about in that meeting.
Okay, we'll look at that. We could
just
certainly
throw that out there.
Be prepared at that point, absolutely. Okay.
Okay.
Thank you, Commissioners, very much.
If you have questions, why don't you just do those separately?
As a slide, there's eight states.
Xcel Energy does not. Oh yeah, Michigan. Thank you. Yeah.
So we have Michigan. Teeny tiny. With Wisconsin because it's so small. We serve such a small portion of it. They're within Wisconsin.
Okay.
Yes.
Do you guys want copies of this slide presentation?
Yeah,
okay. Good.
I had a question as far as these dirty poles and the current migrating or tracking. Does it actually hit the ground in some cases?
So stupid.
Well, it migrates to the ground versus the ground system that's built on the pole. It's put there for that purpose to.
It migrates to the wood, right?
No, well, it's intended to go through the ground system. We have a ground system that connects what's on the pole and then to a ground rod that's at the pole that migrates it back to ground.
I'm just wondering if that's dangerous. I mean, if a passerby goes by and touches that pole.
It's not a lot of current. But
it touches on fire a bit.
Approximately at this point on the pole. Sorry.
Don't touch it. That's where
it stops.
Okay.
So there's a copper
ground
rod that's driven. So it's a grounded. So every pole is grounded.
Okay.
And don't go by.
Yeah.
Bring everybody.
Yeah, it's designed that way to make it as safe as it is, actually.
I didn't know they caught on fire.
My kids.
As far as the rate case goes, I mean, how will this work? If these steps go forward, will it become a new rate case, or will you just adjust the previous one, or what's the
process? Well,
I think what I heard him say is they'll come up with a cost, and then they'll track it, and then it'll be put into the next rate case as one of the revenue requirements. So you'll front the money, basically. The company will pay.
Well, that's one option to defer it. If we can get a deferral, then we can amortize. That's an option. Or depending on the timing, maybe it'll essentially go into service right when our test year would start and interim rates would start. So we have to kind of talk about what would be the most effective approach.
See, there is no... They're on a blackout for rate cases until...
Freeze. Through 2017.
Through 2017.
Yep, through 2017. 18, yes.
Any idea what the cost was to replace the 6600 cable?
$500,000?
Well, obviously we just got it done on Sunday. So I can't tell you actual cost. Our estimate was roughly $500,000.
And you don't know what percentage that is of the overall cable system?
I don't off the top of my head, no. It'd be very small compared to the rest of the underground system.
To what? Very small.
If we had 63,000 feet to replace and that was 6,000, it would be 10%.
For example, we're looking at it's about 10% of what the total 500 MCM would have been back is in 2012,
when
for example.
When we first started removing it,
that's cost.
And that's not all of it.
It's only a small percentage of the total underground cable.
We use different terms to talk about different vintages and designs of underground cable. If you add up all of it, this is probably a small percentage.
Correct.
Less than a percentage.
I would say yes.
Oh.
Yes.
Yes.
And I think
less than a percentage.
We talked, it was about 40-year-old cable we were talking about.
Oh, that's
that vintage?
Some of that unjacketed cable is in that 40-year-old vintage, yes.
Is the paper stuff 70 years old then? Because I thought that was some 70.
Yeah, I don't know the exact age of when that paper and lead was put in the ground. I can tell you it's been there a very, very long time.
He gets it. So the lead, that's probably could be 70 vintage.
I would hate to throw that year out, but it's old.
It's old vintage design of underground cable. What we put in today is a different design.
It's aluminum. And jacket.
I don't know what it is.
Correct, it's aluminum. What we currently use is an aluminum cable, yes.
Back to the poles. Does the age of these poles
factor into how susceptible they are to fire, and how old are some of your poles in Fargo? I've heard pretty old.
You know, wood poles can last 100 years. You know, if you know, we're inspecting them. It's really more to do with how dry they are versus how old they are. So you can have a new pole catch fire, you know, and a 100-year-old pole not catch fire. You know, it's really, do you have the right circumstances for that to happen? And it's more a combination of wet wood and dry wood that causes that to happen along with the litigation grant.
So you want to get this done, I heard the panel here say, so immediately. The rate case is until 2018. So can you amend the current rate case to include what these folks need to recoup?
Well, that's what we're going to talk about in the next. They're going to develop some No, we would come up with. They would come up with an investment plan for the capital they need, and then they would track it, and then it would be included in the next rate case.
So. Okay, so you would do it, and then basically bill your.
There's ways to do
in
that
in the next rate case.
Yeah, you defer recovery of it through these mechanisms, and then deal with it when you have everything on the table.
I would just throw out there that the whole discussion, in my mind, always, it's that whole cost-benefit analysis. Just because a cable is X amount of years old doesn't mean it's bad. And so that's what XL continues to run as well as we do that back and forth. So we have to be very careful to say replace everything because it doesn't all need to be replaced. But we're getting more data points on this cable, which we always knew it had to be replaced, so now we'll more than likely accelerate that, which is appropriate. But as we look at these poles, too, it's all that whole discussion that – ratepayers have to understand that if you accelerate something, there's a cost to it. And so you run that back and forth. And I think that's got to be part of this whole shaping of this discussion.
But before you would go forward on these investments, you would have to get at least a nod from...
They already have that, Jim. They already have the initial approval to do X amount of dollars on these cables. What they're asking for potentially is an accelerated schedule. And that's, I think, the focus point. Do we move this so they can be done in 2018, or do they continue using the additional dollars they've laid out now? And I think what I heard all of us say today is we're open to that discussion to get it done by 2018, where we didn't have an end date before. We just knew that as cables got to a certain failure rate, they were going to pull them out. And that was the discussion in the rate case, is I think I asked the question, let's take them all out. And they said, well, no, we don't want to do that. There's some really good investment out there. We don't want to accelerate that unless we need to. So as the failure rate would dictate that, is why we asked for an engineer dedicated to Fargo so they could look at the system. So when Corey was going through and identified what needed to be replaced, their initial investment was not enough until they went out and surveyed the whole cable system. Now they look at they need to get everything out a little bit earlier based on the data they picked up, and they would like some earlier revenues for that.
Do you guys will have to approve that accelerated schedule?
They can do what they want, but they'd be smart to have us give them a tacit approval. Yeah. I think what would happen is they're going to, what Julie said, they're going to come up with a variety of options and discussion points they can. They'll come back to us June 22nd and lay out different things, and then we'll then do something with that, is what I see the discussion laying out.
You were saying this has happened kind of dumb luck, and they come in, like, traffic tickets, eights in this case. But, I mean, is this the worst threat grade state region in this small time span? Would you
I would say, unfortunately, no, it's not. There's a lot of different causes here, but yeah, I've unfortunately seen a longer run in a smaller
in
community, not in North Dakota.
I can only go back to 1999 when I came up here as an engineer. I was the area engineer. From a very short span of time, have I seen this? No, maybe not in this short of span. But I think the one thing, and several of us have talked about this, is there's multiple causes here that don't lend us to a single path. I guess is how I would put it. All of them concerning, absolutely. Do we absolutely want to make sure that we can do everything we possibly can to stop this and not have this run again? Absolutely.
Sure.
But I don't think there's anything systemic here, I guess is how I would put it.
There's nothing that you brought forward today is something that we have not been addressing for at least 8 years. Mm-hmm. It's just all these different items converge at the same point.
Mm-hmm. I would
so
agree
we've
with that.
We've talked about tree trimming, we've talked about the Intelti, we've talked about these cables, we've got the – I mean, so right now it's just they all hit at the same time, and what can we continue to do to reduce that risk?
I agree. Yes. I agree.
There is no silver bullet that all of a sudden we came out with this today.
I don't believe there is, no.
Except backup generators.
All right. Thank you. We'll look forward.